Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations. Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. Which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Offers require porting of number not currently active on T-Mobile network. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the podcast arena. Coming to the ring at this time...
Oh, you didn't know? You have better call somebody!
First, representing this week in Geek, and from parts unknown, he is Mike, the Birdman, Don.
I am one hard...
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn. Ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn. Tell people to stay off the lawn. Compare it to your neighbor's lawn. And complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
His tag team partner, representing the Geekcast Radio Network, and hailing from the outer reaches of your mind, he is Mike, TFG1 Blanchard.
I got four words for you. Check out my ass.
And from the Great White North, here is your special guest referee, Ryan, the Uneven Flow.
The multi always gets his man.
You are listening to Mayhem Mikes. And now, let's get ready to podcast!
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Mayhem Mikes. We are here. We are not exactly thrilled, but we're here. I'm, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me is Ryan, and even Flo Merkley. Hello, sir.
I'm perfectly thrilled, just not about the stuff we're going to talk about, but hey.
Yeah, it's... Mike Dodd tapped out, folks. He was like, I hated Extreme Rules, so...
to be fair, when's the last time he's been on a podcast?
You said it, not me. Anyway... So tonight we're going to talk about Extreme Rules and Money in the Bank. Both were very lackluster.
Well, they had some good points.
They had some good points, but overall, both were very kind of... I think I said this on Twitter or Facebook or wherever. It's like after WrestleMania, the creative and the storylines just kind of dropped the ball. I mean, the athleticism is always going to be there. You know, the sports part of it is always going to be there. But the actual entertainment and storyline part is like... Extreme Rules was very un-extreme. Like,
it feels like, though, like that's part of the problem with WWE right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not really concentrating on what they're good at. For example, like, right now, the athleticism and the wrestling ability, I would argue, is maybe better than it's ever been. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a ridiculous amount of athletic talent and guys who can do, you know, just crazy stuff in the ring. But the problem is, you know, the entertainment aspect, as in the whole writing and, you mm-hmm. know, writing good storylines and making the characters interesting, they're really stinking at.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, like, they've got the WW part. It's the E part that's bad. And I think part of the problem is they concentrate on the storylines and everything. Like, I'm getting outside of the pay-per-views, mm-hmm. but, for example, like, that long segment on Monday night to end Raw, which was the, you know, the reveal that, you know, Cass was the one attacking Enzo.
Yeah.
Which, it's not a bad reveal. I don't have an issue with that. The issue I have with it was a really long segment.
I think that's like, the most I've seen. I'm not sure about his NXT days, because I haven't watched any of his NXT stuff, but I'm pretty sure that's the longest Cass has done mic work since he's been in WWE.
You might be right overall, too. Like, he didn't talk an awful lot in NXT. Now, to be in his defense, that was probably his best work. But
oh,
it just
yeah.
went on too long. It's yeah. a little like, I like Bray Wyatt and his promos and that kind of thing, but he goes way too long very often. Mm-hmm. And then the other problem with Bray, of course, is his promos are interesting, but he says the same shit and then goes out and loses.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not interesting if you know he has no chance whatsoever of winning. So yeah. it gets kind of boring at that point. And there's so many guys that have fallen into that trap right now, too. Like, they wrestle really well, but you never feel like it's going anywhere for them. And so, yeah, it's just...
I mean, honestly, the only... I'm trying to think now. Yeah, because they're on Raw. Miz and Dean, I said this, I think, last episode or the episode before when we did WrestleMania or something. We've seen Miz and Dean before.
Repeatedly.
But I think this time they've upped the ante a little bit with the whole Miz pushing Maryse in the way, kind of like using her as a shield, which is not exactly cool. And it's really kind of stupid when you think about it for his character, because he's always wanting to, you know, talk up to people. But I think Dean and Miz's interactions with each other when they're not actually fighting each other, when, you know, like the whole teddy bear thing and the cameraman bit was great. I love the cameraman bit.
Yeah, I'd agree that, like, there's something about them that they've improved, and that's mm-hmm. been a fun angle. I've really enjoyed the Joe Brock stuff. Well, I'm really interested in that.
Let me ask you, when they had to empty the entire locker room to split them up, was it this week or last week, or there was sometime recently?
That was this week.
Okay. Didn't that feel like Brock Taker?
It did, but they haven't done it in a couple of years, so at least they're not overdoing it. Like, the Brock Taker one was literally almost 2 years ago.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I agree it did, but it sort of worked. The only thing I didn't like was I feel like it would have felt more important if Brock actually talked.
Yeah.
Because he talks so rarely, I think it would have meant something. It would have been kind of cool, but eh. I'm kind of nitpicking, though. I like what they've done with that. But then everything else, like, so you've got, right now, you've mm-hmm. got Bray and Seth feuding. There's no chance Bray wins that, so who cares? Like, it's the same stuff. He keeps telling Seth, like, I'm a god. And my reply to that would be, like, I don't think God loses about 90% of his matches. I'm pretty sure Jinder Mahal, when he was a jobber, won more often than Bray does. So, yeah, that... Who cares? I hate to say it, but Randy Jinder's just not doing it for me.
It's no, it's not. It,
like, I just
Randy beating up the Singh brothers is nice, but the Randy Jinder stuff in itself is...
I don't know,
is...
it's repetitive. And there's something about Jinder that he's gotten way better. I want to give him credit for that. But he still, it doesn't feel special when he's out there with the belt at all. He doesn't feel different from anybody else. Like, I look at him and I hear him talk and I go, yeah, he's got talent. But he's still not half as talented as a lot of the other guys on the card.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that hurts him a lot. And I mean, Orton's been solid in this, but not great. Also, him getting mad at Singh for involving his family is hilarious. Because, I mean, Orton's big breakout was when he beat up John Cena's dad, if you remember.
Yeah, legend and killer.
Yeah, and then his other big moment was threatening Hunter's family. So,
yeah.
whoops, they seem to, I guess he forgot about all that, but anyway, that's not doing it for me. The Cesaro Sheamus stuff against the Hardys has been good matches,
yeah,
but I don't know, it for whatever reason it just hasn't been clicking. Then you've got Owen Styles. They just haven't really got going yet, but I have a feeling that'll be good because the two guys are ridiculously talented. But right now, I'll put that in the not going yet. And then that's about it. Like,
yeah,
I know there's other sort of feuds, but nothing that's for sure going to be a match at the next pay-per-view for each brand.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just, there's a lot of stuff that's not doing it for me.
Yeah, and at the time of this recording, or at the time that this goes up on the 26th of June, we'll be 1 week and 1 day away from John's return to SmackDown. But the only reason why I bring this up is because I've seen this advertisement on the shows. It says, free agent John Cena. So does that mean they're going to do some sort of storyline where he either stays on SmackDown or goes to Raw?
My guess is he comes back to SmackDown and he says, like, I can't stand you, Jinder Mahal, having the belt. I got to challenge you, that kind of thing. And he'll be the one to get it off him. Now, having said that, either I would definitely put him on SmackDown between the two shows again. And I because I really think he would and will inject some life into the show, because it's SmackDown just seems like it doesn't have any direction lately. I really think he would help it a lot, so that's why I'd put him there. Raw sort of has a direction, like when Brock's there, you know, they can hype that up. And their women's division is slightly less of a complete train wreck that we'll get to.
But... yeah. SmackDown, I think it's not just because of John's absence. I also think it's because of Daniel Bryan's absence, because obviously he and Brie had a baby girl. So he's been out. So he hasn't even been doing his general manager stuff. And he just came back after Money in the Bank this week. So, and it seems like, you know, I understand in the beginning when they did the draft, Shane and Daniel said, we're going to be, you know, hands on, but also hands off. We want it to be, you know, the superstars that do the stuff. We don't want to be the interfering, you know, upper management people like Vicky Guerrero and all of that. But still, it's like Shane really hasn't done too much. Like,
I'm okay with it not revolving around the GMs, though, because we had way too much of that with Triple H and Stephanie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, yeah, their biggest problem is their writing just hasn't been good. I mean, I'm not interested in an awful lot of the stuff that happens on it, and...
yeah, it's crazy. All right, so getting into Extreme Rules.
take it to the max. They go extreme.
We're going to lock you up inside of a steel cage.
You will never get extreme.
Kendo stick will be legal. We'll barely get extreme.
Rules were made for superstars like Dean Ambrose.
If Ambrose is disqualified, he's going to lose his Intercontinental Championship to The Miz.
For the first time ever, we're going to have an Extreme Rules Fatal 5-Way match. And the winner will face Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship.
Will it be Seth Rollins?
I've been to Suplex City, and I'm not afraid to go back.
Samoa Joe.
Action. I enter the Fatal 5-Way. Results, I win.
Finn Balor.
I will go on to face Brock Lesnar for the championship that I never lost.
Bray Wyatt.
I will take the Spear of Destiny,
and I will deliver it right into the heart of the beast.
For Roman Reigns.
And I'm the only guy around here that can beat Brock Lesnar. This is my yard.
Every man for himself. Who is the favorite? Everybody has an opportunity. One of five men could change the course of the new era.
DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. For action, comedy, mayhem, and more, read it now at DeCian.com. DeCian.com.
And now, WWE Network presents Extreme Rules.
Did you watch the pre-show for this one? Because I didn't. I never do, but yeah. I always have to ask.
I saw the end. I've gone back and watched it now. I mean, Kalisto Apollo Crews was solid, and I mean, mm-hmm. That's the only match that was on the pre-show. It was a solid match. I mean, it was entertaining. It was better than some of the stuff that was on the card, which we'll get to. But yeah, it's... and I mean, this is going to be a recurring theme in every single match except the final one. Mm-hmm. But why did they call it Extreme Rules? Because there was next to no Extreme Rules or anything else. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first match in this was The Miz and Dean Ambrose, where if there's a DQ, Dean still loses the belt. How does having a DQ finish in a match, now it didn't end in a DQ, but I'm just saying, how would having any type of DQ, how does that mesh with it being an Extreme Rules pay-per-view?
It doesn't at all. Yeah, but that ending was so meh. I mean...
I was okay with it, because I was happy that they didn't just go with the DQ stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was worried that that's how they'd end it. And I like that Miz still didn't really win cleanly.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, we've talked about this plenty of times before. You know, Dean's not... When he gets belts on him, he doesn't really step up. He just kind of stays in neutral.
And I don't think it's a coincidence. That's another reason why this feud with Miz seems a little more exciting, because Miz is the one chasing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Or sorry, Dean's the one chasing, not Miz. Whoops.
Yeah. Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, Dean, when he's on the chase for something, he's really good. But you also have to be good when you get the belt. I mean, honestly, Dean needs to take some Cena lessons. I mean... Very rarely in Cena's career have I seen him be a paper champion. If I don't think he's ever really been a paper champion, but
and they've never really let Dean do the open challenge stuff.
Yeah,
and or anything like that too, which I think's hurt him. And he always seems to feud with guys who are not super interesting, except for The Miz, who's for whatever reason, The Miz has just been on his game for the past year plus now. So
yeah, almost 2 years at this point. I mean, he's really been going strong with it. Next up, we had the mixed tag match. This was the wasn't this the cruiserweight thing? Sasha and Rich versus Alicia and Dar.
Yeah, so I mean, Miz wins the title here, and that feud has continued. And yeah, the next match was Rich and Sasha versus Noam Dar and Alicia Fox. I could care absolutely less about this, mostly because, to be blunt, Alicia Fox is horrible.
Yes, she is.
She just has really not improved that much. She's okay in the ring. Her character is awful and annoying. And I just don't care. Next.
She has no character. I mean,
mercifully, Sasha keeps winning in this feud.
Then
Rich Swann won on Raw, and hopefully this is the last we'll see of this really silly feud.
I mean, I like Sasha. I think Sasha deserves better than this.
Oh, yes. Yeah, she should be in the mix for the title, but...
She should, but she's not.
No.
So then we had the women's kendo stick match.
Whoa. You're forgetting one of the most important parts of this pay-per-view, and that is the brilliant work of Elias Sampson.
Please, God, no. Stop.
I love the drifter gimmick he's got, and I love his terrible singing. I love how cliche and how he sings about how much the town sucks and everything for cheap eat. I really like him. I don't know what it is. I know he's annoying, and yeah, his singing is deliberately not good, but I get a kick out of it for some reason. So I would walk with Elias. And then, yeah, we had the super quick kendo stick match, which, okay, so out of curiosity, did you feel like, I have no idea if this is true or not, but it feels like the kendo stick like fell down early or something.
Yeah.
This match was really quick, but the problem is, though, they still seemed to get in all the stuff they wanted. Like, the whole bit was, you know, Bayley was going to get extreme, and she was angry, et cetera, et cetera.
And she really didn't.
And then she gets the stick, and she can't, like, hit...
Yeah.
She can't bring herself to beat Alexa with it, which... I don't know. It just seems
now,
silly.
Is this...
It didn't help Bailey's character at all.
No, it didn't help her character at all. And you look at this match. It's Bailey versus Alexa. It's face versus heel. Obviously, Bailey is the face and Alexa is the heel. If Alexa ever turns face, I probably won't ever like her again because she is one of the best women heels on Raw. But it's one of those things where Bailey is one of the best faces on Raw, and that's what's the way she's always been. So putting Bailey even in a pay-per-view called Extreme Rules and trying to see if she would even get extreme honestly makes no sense half the time to me. But it's one of those things where they hype this up. They're like, okay, well, let's see if she gets extreme. And she just stood there. And then Alexa just beat the living shit out of her.
Yeah, I mean, what did this do for anybody?
Nothing.
Yeah, I don't feel like this did anything for anybody. It's another example of like what I was trying to say earlier, that SmackDown's writing, it just doesn't feel like they're going anywhere with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like these two are good wrestlers. Like Alexa Bliss has improved way more than I ever thought she would. I was completely wrong about her.
Mm-hmm.
And Bayley is fantastic.
Yep.
They've pretty much trashed her character at this point. And, like, they deserve better than this stupid short match, which in the end didn't do anything and just kind of makes both of them look bad.
Yep, pretty much. Then we get to Sheamus and Cesaro versus the Hardys. This was by far probably the best match of the night.
I'd say the finale, but anyway, my problem with this one was the stipulation was stupid. The whole both guys have to be on the outside at the same time seemed confusing, and it caused like a lot of really silly moments, like where somebody, you know, could have gone out of the cage or left through the door, but didn't because they didn't want to leave their partner alone. And then in the end, Jeff just leaves Matt alone for a bit anyway. But it didn't matter because Matt managed to beat up both Cesaro and Sheamus for a bit, but still didn't leave for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It just, this was, the stipulation just kind of ruined, or at least for me, I thought this could have been a lot better, is what I'm trying to say, but the stipulation was silly. The ending was silly too, where Jeff hits the gigantic
Swanton.
You know, Swanton off the, well, Whisper in the Wind off the top, onto both men. But both Sheamus and Cesaro get up and get out before Jeff can even get up and go through the door. That was also silly.
Yeah, it was.
If your move apparently results in you being way more injured than the other guy, it's a dumb move.
Mm-hmm.
I realize, like, you know, obviously it's not... obviously that move hurts Jeff a lot in real life.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, wrestling fiction, when you do a move, it's supposed to hurt your opponent more than you.
Yep. Absolutely. Up next was the Austin versus Neville. This was the cruiserweight match. Before we get to this, I do, because I want to bring this up. I know we talk a lot about the announcing, but Corey Graves was on point in this pay-per-view. I mean, he had the line during the women's match from Prince Adam to He-Man. I was like, oh, yeah. No, you didn't. And then for the Austin-Neville match, he's like, a lot of hot sauce on that shot right there. Huh, Cole? I was like, oh, my God.
Alexa Bliss wants nothing to do with the challenger.
Of course, Bliss is running away. Bayley picked up the kendo stick. It's like she went from Prince Adam to He-Man.
Yeah, I really like him. He is the best they have of any of the announcers, which isn't saying a lot when you consider some of the other ones.
Yeah.
By the way, does David Otunga even do anything anymore?
Apparently, he's still doing a movie.
Okay. Oh,
apparently.
Gee. I mean, to be fair, I would send Booker off with him too because he's also terrible. But Booker just doesn't make any sense. Sometimes I wonder, like, what he's watching.
Yeah.
Maybe they've, you know, maybe each of them has their own monitors, but they always forget to plug Booker's in, and so he just kind of talks about whatever. Or,
yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, by the way, I should note about the last match and the others so far that, in my opinion, the right people won each of these matches.
Okay.
Like, I like having the Hardys chasing Cesaro and Sheamus right now.
Yeah.
I think that works. Because the Hardys are good enough and great enough. Everybody knows who they are. They don't need the belts on them to be a legitimate tag team.
But right.
Cesaro and Sheamus, I think it helps them more right now because they're, you know, they're still a newish tag team. They're not the Hardys, who are, you know, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Cesaro and Sheamus are new, and they finally moved past the storyline of them needing to try to get along with each other. They're getting along with each other now. And them having the belts and the Hardys chasing the belt. I mean, it would be different if it was the Dudleys and the Hardys like going for a milestone. You know, because you know when they brought the Dudleys back, the Dudleys were going to be like, oh, it's been 10 years or 12 years or however the hell long, and we're trying to become, you know, 10-time tag team. You know, they're going for that certain number, kind of like what John's doing with the WWE Championship. But in this case, it makes more sense, like you said, to have the Hardys chasing the championship than actually them being the champions, because they're not going to be around long enough to break any tag team records.
No, probably not. So,
Austin versus Neville. I actually did watch this match, and the reason why I say I actually did it, I'm not into a lot of the indie stuff IDW. Wow. I'm not into a lot of the stuff that WWE does outside of Raw and SmackDown, even though the Cruiserweight stuff is on Raw and SmackDown. And it depends on who's fighting who, but I like Austin Aries versus Neville, and I like Neville before he went back to NXT and then the Cruiserweights. But this match,
I like him as the bad guy, though. This has worked really well for
him. Oh, yes, it did, yeah.
And I feel sort of bad for Aries, because, I mean, he's got a, you know, he's chasing the belt. Aries, for anyone who doesn't know, is like a natural heel slash bad guy. Mm-hmm. It's really tough for him to be the good guy. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I feel kind of bad that, you know, he had to be the, has to be the good guy against the Neville.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't work nearly as well. He is an excellent bad guy. So I'm hoping what happens now is, you know, he, because he lost this match, this has been the last time he's challenged for it. He comes, he goes away, and he kind of comes back as a colossal jerk, which he's excellent at. And this was a, another stipulation. This was a submission match. So, I mean, it's yet another, like, stipulation that, what does that have to do with Extreme Rules?
Nothing.
The only one we had the cage match, which the cage didn't figure in the same way it usually does because of the whole both guys need to be out at the same time stipulation.
Yeah.
And then we had the kendo stick match, which, I mean, the less said about that, the better.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We still, We finally get Extreme with the next match, at least.
Fatal Five Way. Oh boy.
So we had Bray Wyatt versus Seth Rollins versus Samoa Joe versus Roman Reigns versus Finn Balor. I loved this match.
Yeah, this match was good.
I thought there was just a lot of fun stuff happening. I thought they did a good job of making everybody look good. And giving everybody some moments to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And I honestly wasn't sure who was going to win as I was watching it. Except I knew Bray Wyatt wasn't, because...
Yeah, Bray Wyatt never wins.
Never wins anything, yeah.
I know they'll never do this, because they don't want to turn him... They don't want to not have him be the monster character, but Bray Wyatt is the WWE's version of... Rodney Dangerfield. I get no respect. No respect. I like the Fatal Five Way. I think Joe winning was the best outcome.
Yeah, because I think they wanted somebody who could look like he can defeat Brock Lesnar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether he does or doesn't, I assume he won't, but I suppose you never know.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like, the plan, let's be honest, is... You know, Reigns is going to beat Lesnar at WrestleMania. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And everybody, and, you know, Vince and everybody seem to think everyone's going to cheer. we'll see how that goes. But, I mean, it feels like they're just delaying the inevitable Brock versus Roman, where they anoint Roman the, you know, toughest guy in WWE and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So I didn't think he was necessarily going to win this either. But in the interim, yeah, Joe's a guy who's been, you know, wrestling forever, always in smaller federations. But he's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, the whole match here was just great. And I am slowly becoming a Samoa Joe fan. I really enjoy him... the idea of him and Brock and the whole setup that has happened since Extreme Rules. I mean,
and Joe's one of those guys who is a legitimate, like, badass in real life, you know, stepping away from the wrestling ring. Although if you watch him on Up Up Down Down, he's a funny and B a really nice guy.
Right.
But I mean, you know, he looks like he could completely destroy you. And that's because he can. So.
Because he can, yeah. That's why they call him the Destroyer.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a match that's definitely going to be hard-hitting. It's two guys that tend to work stiff, as the saying goes.
Mm.
Like, you know, they enjoy matches that are really physical and that kind of thing. So it should be a really good show. And it's... never happened before, which is pretty cool. Like, you know, these two guys, there's not a lot of dream matches left of guys who have never met each other.
Yep.
And that kind of thing. But this is one of them for a lot of fans. Like, me who, you know, I watched Joe when he broke into TNA all those years ago and thought, this guy's really good. Why did, you know, WWE pass on him? And all these years, finally they get around to it.
Yep, absolutely. 0 to 5 scale, what would you give Extreme Rules?
I mean, this wasn't good. I mean, there are two matches I enjoyed out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought the stipulation hurt, or stipulations in almost all the matches hurt the matches.
Yeah, they did. The stipulations were just stupid.
Yeah, like a DQ match at Extreme Rules. Like, oh, yeah, that's great. Also, I mean, you know, Ambrose usually works better in the more extreme, like, different matches, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So to take that away from him at an Extreme Rules was baffling. Anyway.
Like, well, was it last year or the year before the Extreme Rules, the, it was the Jericho match.
Yeah.
With the tax and all the stuff that, it was Dean's Asylum match. That's what it was. Like, that's what Dean needs. Dean needs that extreme type of stuff in the ring.
Or just let him do something different. Be it brawl backstage for a bit or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, don't, you know, have an Extreme Rules matchup for the guy and then
have it not be extreme.
Yeah, at all. Anyway. I think I'm gonna give it a 2 out of 5.
Same here, 2 out of 5.
And I mean, most of that 2's the final match.
Yeah, it is the final match. For me, it's also the Austin Neville match as well.
Yeah, and you enjoyed that was really good as well. Yeah. But yeah.
So, all right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back to Controversy.
And now, Gold Bond presents WWE Money in the Bank.
So, it is time for Money in the Bank. And we thought Extreme Rules couldn't get even worse. Oh, my God.
All right. Well, anyway, we opened up with the Hype Bros and the Colognes on the pre-show.
Yeah.
Ugh, jeez. I mean, I'm real glad to see the Hype Bros. I don't care. Whatever.
Well, Zach's all right. Zach's a cool guy.
I like Zach. I like Zach.
You just don't like Mojo.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Mojo. And I'm sure. I've seen him. I mean, he's a good guy with the kids, that kind of thing. He's just not necessarily aimed at me.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, his interview after he lost, where he kind of got introspective, was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. I just... not a fan.
Yeah. No, not
speaking
really.
Of things I'm not a fan of. by the way, the Hype Bros won that match, and now it looks like they might finally get their title shot if they can beat the Usos in a non-title match. Because remember, they were supposed to challenge way back when Zach actually got injured.
Yeah. That happened on Raw. I'm like, oh my god. SmackDown, I'm sorry.
But like forever ago.
Yeah. I'm like, what the hell?
I'm kind of happy that they remembered it, though. Because, I mean, one of the complaints about WWE is they forget wins and losses a lot. It's.
Yeah, I mean, that. Well, and the reason why that came up, that happened, is because of what happened in the first ever women's Money in the Bank ladder match.
Well, the match was solid through up until the end, and
yeah.
I liked that it looked like the women were doing a really good job of building up, using the ladders more and slowly getting towards it, because you'll see the men kind of did that this time too. They didn't bust out the ladders immediately and start flipping off them. Like, it was a good way to slowly build to the more exciting stuff.
Right.
But then it just goes off the rails. Like, it felt like it ended too early. B, the ending is just stupid. I mean, so I'm going to set aside wrestling for a second, which seems a little weird in a wrestling show, but
it's okay.
my problem with this is, for years, the women, the female wrestlers, were a sideshow to the men. Yeah. And one of the real negatives of the Attitude Era was the shitty treatment of women and the female wrestlers. You know, they were there for bra and panties matches and lingerie matches and all this other stuff. They weren't treated as athletes. Because, I mean, the men never had swimsuit competitions or, you know, underwear matches or whatever.
Yeah.
And we fast forward, you know, years later, these women, Becky, Charlotte, Natalia as well, I'll throw in there, Sasha and Bayley, and now, you know, Asuka and some of the others down in NXT. Oh, and Alexa should probably get thrown into this as well, too, because she's improved enough. And Naomi's an excellent wrestler, too.
Yep.
They've all proved, like, some of them are much better than some of the men on the roster.
Absolutely.
And they deserve the chance to have the opportunity to use the same things the men get to use to make themselves look good.
Mm-hmm.
So finally they get that chance. And the fucking man in it is the guy who grabs the briefcase.
The Toad, yeah.
I understand they did it because, in terms of wrestling now, getting back to that, Carmella's a heel. She's a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And James is, you know, helping her. And yeah. this was their way to get them booed more. And it worked in that sense. But what doesn't work for me is it just feels really tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
That it's 2017. You're finally trying to portray the woman as something more than a, you know, cheap sideshow. Or just there to be stared at by the guys or drooled on.
Mm-hmm.
And you do, you know, you pull this shit.
Yeah.
It just felt really wrong.
Yeah, it did.
And not from a wrestling standpoint. From a wrestling standpoint, it makes sense, and it's a smart sort of thing. But there's more to this than wrestling, in my opinion. But
the misogyny in this whole thing is just crazy. Because... Yeah,
and that's the issue. And I know that, you know, some people watch wrestling to get away from it, so maybe they don't see it, that kind of thing. But I think if you're a woman and you're watching this and you're getting into wrestling, or actually, hell, if you're one of the women in this match, you probably feel pretty shitty seeing a guy, you know, be the one that ends it.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the end of this match, all of the other women were outside the ring, or they were all incapacitated, or the only woman in the ring was Carmella.
Yeah.
None of the other four women could actually get to
James Carmella
to stop him from tossing the briefcase down to Carmella. I wish that could have happened, because what I don't understand is it's not even the misogyny, the reverse sexualization, all that crap. It's not even that. What I don't understand is this is a fucking pay-per-view. People are still probably paying $30, $40, $50, $60, $70 for these things on cable. You're paying that amount of money. First of all, go get the WWE Network, $9.99. But second of all, if you're paying that kind of money, this is the worst match you could see, because it sets up a rematch on SmackDown, which you can watch.
Yeah, for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I'm like, I mean, you know, yeah, you're right in saying about the whole, you know.
Yeah, I mean, why even have this match? Because now they've hit the reset button. Mm-hmm. And it's just none of this. You know, it would have been a lot better if Ellsworth had held the ladder a la Kane, Seth, or helped, you know, Carmella pick it up or get to the briefcase. That would have been okay, cheating. But the way they did it was silly enough that in the end, they've now decided to reset it. I feel like what they should have done is they should have stuck with this. If, you know, if you're going to do it, stick with it. Have Carmella, you know, have Ellsworth come out and say, like, oh, I did this for you, that kind of thing. You know, this is how much I care about you. Have Carmella treat him like shit for a couple weeks. Then have her just, like, dump him and make him, like, feel like a complete idiot in front of the live audience. And then have her reveal that, you know, this was all her plan. She was just using him all along.
Mm-hmm.
That would get her, I think, a lot of heat. Without the match, you know, without having to redo everything, because now it just seems silly.
Yeah. What would make it even better, of course, this is, I don't think this can happen now, obviously, because they're on two different shows, is the fact that her boyfriend is on Raw.
Oh, yeah, her real life one, yeah, Cass.
Yeah, she's dating Cass.
Yes, in reality.
Because I wanted to see... Well, I wasn't sure. Who knows? But I wanted to see if they were actually in real life, her and James actually in some sort of friendship, relationship, whatever. And they're not, obviously. But it would have been awesome if Cass came down.
Actually, you know, do what I just said and then have Cass come down and beat up James.
Make
him feel even dumber and worse.
Yep.
And that's, you know, your...
Yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, just...
It was all kinds of wrong.
And just in terms of this pay-per-view, like getting back to actual wrestling again, so, you know, Carmella won the Money in the Bank match for the women through, you know, controversial finish.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the next match end controversially with a friggin' count out.
Yeah.
Like, the whole point of pay-per-views is you build up to them for a month on the shows for free, and then you have the big blow-off stuff at the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. But nothing happened in this pay-per-view. Like, the first match is literally being reset. Match two, the New Day one beat the Usos via count out. And so that feud's continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no ending to the first two matches.
Yeah, no. Naomi versus Lana was good.
It was solid. Lana was better than I expected, but she still has a ways to go.
Oh, absolutely.
It almost feels like it was too early to put her in the ring, but I would have said that about Alexa originally, and I would have been completely wrong, so...
Mm. I mean, like, Lana has always been the eye candy, she's always been the escort, not literally, but, you know, the ring escort.
She's always been a manager, yeah.
Yeah, she's always been that, you know, secondary person to Rusev or whatever, and now that they're actually putting her in, we're seeing what she can do. And, you know, she still does the razzle-dazzle of showing off her body and smiling and the blow kiss and all this and all that and everything else. And I was really, really wondering what the hell kind of ring attire she was going to wear under that dress. Because we saw she was in the boots, but, you know, you never know. So I think Naomi versus Lana is probably, I don't want to say the best match on this card, but... Out of the two women matches, it's the better of the two, obviously.
Yeah, ouch.
Maria returns without Santino.
Yeah, well, I mean, Santino's not employed by WWE.
I know he's not, but I'm just saying that's who I remember her being with before, you know, years and years and years ago.
We also got the Fashion Files set up. So as much as I love the Fashion Files, it bugs me when there's a match that wasn't even booked on the card. Like, it just screams that, hey, we couldn't be bothered to prepare anything.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a match we're just throwing together. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, they had a super short match with the Ascension where they basically crushed them in record time. But that was after the next match, which was the Orton-Mahal match, which... I mean, it felt like it almost followed the exact same script as their previous match, you know?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
The Singh brothers get involved, Orton has to beat them up, and Jinder sneaks in, hits his finisher,
Yep. The only difference here is that, you know, the Singh brothers went over to the legends, Bob Orton and and all that. And I think, honestly, that was the best part of the match, is actually seeing Randy's dad and Ric Flair and Sergeant Slaughter.
I mean, don't get me wrong.
I like Randy as an athlete and his wrestling stuff and all of that. But as far as the overall match, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this was okay, and I think they're both good, pretty solid workers. I think Jinder's improved a ton, but again, like, for whatever reason, I don't look at him and see champion and think this guy is special.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's just a matter of time, but I don't know. Like, it still feels like they maybe shouldn't have put the belt on him when they did, but, I mean, I also don't know how much money they're making, so I mean,
yeah, it's a little crazy. And to finish it off, we had the men's Money in the Bank ladder match with Corbin and who else?
All right, so this one we had AJ, Dolph Ziggler, Sami Zayn, Baron Corbin, who won, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Kevin Owens. So, yeah, they had Corbin jump Nakamura and pummel him so bad he had to go to the back.
Yep.
There was a ton of really good spots in this.
There was, yeah.
There was a couple times it really felt like Zayn or AJ had a good shot at winning this. They didn't... Ziggler and Owens really didn't feel like they had many chances to win. Also, poor Owens, good lord.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know what it is with him in ladder matches. He joked about it on a podcast once that it seems like he takes the absolute worst shots anytime there's a ladder match or anytime anyone sets anything up. He's the one that goes through it. That's pretty much what happened to him in this one.
Yeah, I mean, he got tossed around like a rag doll with these ladders.
Yeah, and again, I'm really impressed with his athleticism and his toughness. I mean, he didn't get hurt either, but he made everything look really good. I'm always impressed with his work. Styles is the same. I thought they did a good job of making Nakamura look good in a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
And I'm not the biggest Corbin fan, but he's improved a lot. And I mean, the whole point of the Money in the Bank stuff is that it gives somebody a chance to shine who maybe wouldn't get it before. You know, the great example of that, of course, is Edge, who was kind of, you know, middle of the pack, mid-carder. And then he was the first one to cash it in when he cashed it in when Cena had been, you know, beat up by the Big Show and like all these other... You know, Cena was in really rough shape, and it was smart, and that you know, he became the opportunist character that we all know, and it really helped his career take off. So I don't know, hopefully that's what happens with Corbin. Maybe he'll find his niche with this.
Yeah, out of the five guys that were in here, AJ and Owens, they're always going to end up getting shots at a title because of who they are and how they are in and out of the ring, you know, their characters and all of that. Like, these guys did, like you said, this is a time for someone to shine. It would have been kind of cool if Shinsuke got it, but I don't think WWE is really ready to let Shinsuke on a longer leash. I think it's too soon because he just got here. And look how long it took them to build up his debut. Like, we kept getting these SmackDown teasers and whatever else. And then we got his debut, and he's been wrestling on the shows and things like that. He's been wrestling on the pay-per-views, but it's, like you said, with this pay-per-view specifically, very limited capacity because he got jumped in the front and then came back down later, which, you know, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I think they're biding their time with him I don't know. I want to say biding their time and not building him up, because I don't know currently who he could actually have a feud with that would be a good feud for either person.
But that's one of the problems, and another one of the problems with WWE is it feels like it feels like all the 50-50 booking is really hurting things, because I try to find feuds for guys and I go, well, they'll never do that, or no, they'll just split wins and that kind of thing. Like, Joe is a great example. They've built him up all of a sudden to challenge Brock, but it would have worked a little better if they had had him beat Seth in the pay-per-view before these.
Yeah.
If they had prepared far enough in advance and had him, you know, beat Rollins, it feels like that would have been a good, would have been a good start to
something.
All of this, but just, yeah. Feels like another missed opportunity, and it's easy for me to sit here and, armchair quarterback after the fact. Oh, this is what they should have done. As I said before, I don't see the money. Like, I have no idea. You know, maybe they're making a ton of money the way it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see the ratings, so.
Yeah. That's Extreme Rules and Money in the Bank. Coming up next time on the podcast, we've got the Undertaker spotlight that we'll be doing in episode 25.
Yay.
And then after that, it'll be Great Balls of Fire in the Battleground.
Stupid name for a pay-per-view.
Yep. Absolutely it is. They should have stuck with Bad Blood.
Or anything. Bring back, not Elimination Chamber, geez. Bring back War Games.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'm not even sure that's a meeting I'd love to be in on. The WWE creative and Vince and everybody, you know, going through the year and listing off what, I mean, SummerSlam is obvious, Survivor Series, WrestleMania, obviously those are obvious. No Mercy's been around for a while. TLC has been around for a while. I'm hoping TLC is more extreme than Extreme Rules was.
Yeah.
I mean, because Extreme Rules was, as I said throughout this whole podcast, very unextreme. So Mike Dodd will be back with us on the Undertaker episode, and we'll go from there. Money in the Bank, it was better than Extreme Rules. I'll give it a 3 out of 5.
Wow, I'm going to go the other way. I'd give this a 1.5, and I hate giving low ratings, because, I mean, you watch these, all of these people are insanely talented, and everybody's trying their best.
Yeah.
But alternatively, I mean, shitty writing is out of their control. And I'm sure the writers are trying their best, too.
I don't know.
Much like with every single Michael Bay Transformers movie, apparently their best is not good enough right now.
Outside of the women's ladder match and all the controversy surrounding that, if I took that away, that's the only reason why it gets a 3 out of 5 for me, because it was middle ground. Besides that controversy, the rest of it was pretty much middle ground. Whereas Extreme Rules, like we've already said, the stipulations were just stupid. They were stipulations. I mean, made no sense whatsoever to the actual pay-per-view itself. So, where can the people find you online, sir?
At Nightbeat.
Where?
At Nightbeat on Twitter. Damn it.
There you go.
Good. Never mind. Good point. Whoops.
I am at TFG and Mike on Twitter. You can follow at Geekcast Radio and at This Week in Geek on Twitter. And join us next time when we have an appointment with the Dead Man.
You just made the list!
All clear.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Offers require porting of number not currently active on T-Mobile network. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers!
Pizza!
Tacos it is.
The one thing we do agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS.
Stop by MetroPCS with the whole family and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Offers require porting of number not currently active on T-Mobile network. During congestion, the fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, this is pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.